Democratic senators held an oversight meeting today on whether the Halliburton company supplied clean water to U.S. troops in Iraq. Military veterans and a water quality examiner were among the witnesses at this hour 15-minute event.
Good morning. My name is Senator Dorgan. I'm chairman of the Democratic Policy Committee. I will be joined by other colleagues soon. We are in the middle of a vote on the floor of the Senate, and nonetheless, I do want to begin. We will also perhaps be interrupted by a vote, I think, in about a half an hour, at which point we'll take about a 10-minute recess and then reconvene very quickly. Today, the Democratic Policy Committee is holding in the eighth in a series of hearings on serious problems with Iraq contracting practices. On January 23rd of this year, we heard testimony from two former Halliburton employees who alleged that Halliburton had supplied unsafe water to our troops in Iraq. This was contaminated water that our troops used to shower, wash their hands and faces, brush their teeth, wash their clothes, and sometimes even make coffee. The whistleblowers alleged that they informed Halliburton of the problem and that the company failed to take corrective action. Shortly after the January 23rd hearing, Halliburton issued a statement stating that it had found neither contaminated water nor medical evidence to substantiate reports of illnesses at the base. The Pentagon referred the matter to the Inspector General, but said that, quote, the allegations appear to have no merit, unquote. I regret to say that the denials by Halliburton and the Pentagon are directly now contradicted by internal Halliburton reports, a report specifically which this committee has obtained, and also by information provided to this committee by an Army physician who is currently serving in Iraq. The report to which I refer was a May 13, 2005 report produced by Will Granger, who was the company's top water quality manager. I'm talking now about Halliburton and its subsidiary. And Mr. Granger worked for that company, and in that report, Mr. Granger states the following, and that report now has been made available. It is an internal Halliburton company report. No disinfection to non-potable water was occurring at Camp Aramadi for water designated for showering purposes. This caused an unknown population to be exposed to potentially harmful water for an undetermined amount of time. Understand, again, this is an internal Halliburton Corporation report produced by a Halliburton employee. This event, continuing to quote from the report, should be considered a, quote, near miss, unquote, as the consequences of these actions could have been very severe, resulting in mass sickness or death. The emphasis here was in the original report. The deficiencies of the camp where the event occurred is not exclusive to that camp, meaning it's not exclusive to Aramadi as a military camp in Iraq, meaning that countrywide all camps suffer to some extent from all or some of the deficiencies noted. This report, again made by an employee of the Halliburton Corporation to the Halliburton Corporation and previously not made available, establishes there was indeed serious contamination of the non-potable water provided to our troops, not only at Camp Aramadi, but throughout the U.S. military camps in Iraq. Today we will hear from witnesses who shed further light on the consequences of Halliburton's failure to supply unsafe water to our troops. Before we do that, however, I want to read an email that this committee has received from a U.S. Army surgeon, a brigade surgeon, who is currently serving in Iraq. She could not be with us here today, obviously. But the email from Army Captain Michelle Callahan describes water contamination at another U.S. military camp in Iraq and the resulting health consequences to our troops of exposure to that water. The email is long, and I will read only small portions and excerpts from it, but that too is publicly available, and she has been given permission by her commanders to provide it. And this is the email partially quoted from Army Captain Physician Michelle Callahan. Sir, I am the 101st Sustainment Brigade Surgeon, a family physician, currently serving in Iraq. I have read information on the internet about the situation you are investigating in Aramadi. The situation here was almost identical. I'm glad to know that your office is looking into this. I find it concerning that even after KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, which is the Halliburton subsidiary, had gone through the investigation at Aramadi, they still provided doubly contaminated water to soldiers at our forward operating base, Q West. In January, I noticed the water in our showering facility was cloudy and had a foul odor. At the same time, over a two-week period, I had a sudden increase in soldiers with bacterial infections presenting to me for treatment. All of these soldiers live in the same living area, PAD 103, and use the same water to shower. I had four cases of skin abscesses, one case of cellulitis, one case of bacterial conjunctivitis. On January 12th, continuing to quote the doctor's email, I asked our preventive medicine environmental science officer, Lieutenant Stratting, to test the water at PAD 103. PM test results of PAD 103 water showed no chlorine residual and was positive for chloroform bacteria. So here we have evidence of, speaking now for myself, we have evidence of both contaminated water and of health problems associated with bacterial infections. The email from the physician then describes how an Army lieutenant determined that Halliburton subsidiary KBR was not properly treating non-potable water being supplied to our troops. And I continue to quote. During a discussion on 1 February 2006 between Lieutenant Stratting and the newly hired KBR water quality technician, Mr. Bill Gist, Lieutenant Stratting mentioned that the bacterial infections that I had been seeing in my clinic. Mr. Gist told Lieutenant Stratting that he had concerns that the reverse osmosis water purification unit concentrate reject was being used to fill the water tanks at the PADs. After hearing this, Lieutenant Stratting investigated. He went to the water treatment site and followed the lines from the reverse osmosis concentrate, which is effectively waste, drained to water trucks filling up with this water. He followed the line to the water trucks filling up with this water. He then followed this truck and observed it pumping the water into the water storage tank at Pad 206. The PM team tested the water at the RPOW concentrate distribution point. The results were as follows. Chloroform positive, E. coli positive. Finally, the email from this physician describes how Halliburton's subsidiary KBR, when confronted with the facts that water was unsafe in violation of military regulations, insisted this was the way that KBR always treated the water. After discovering, now I'm going to continue quoting from the doctor's email, after discovering that KBR was filling the water storage tanks with this so-called wastewater concentrate, Lieutenant Stratting gathered the base mayor, Colonel Grayson, and the Q West KBR site manager, Mr. Torres, and Ms. Van Horn, Mr. Wallace, the RPOW manager, and Mr. Gist, water quality technician, and told them that, she told all of them at the same time that he had identified that KBR was filling the water storage tanks with this wastewater concentrate. Mr. Wallace stated, it has always been done this way, and there's not a problem with it. Lieutenant Stratting explained it's against Army regulations to use wastewater reject or RAUPU reject for personal hygiene. Mr. Wallace argued since the raw water from the Tigris is first filtered through carbon, prior to going into RPOW that it is acceptable for hygiene. This argument is wrong. I'm continuing to quote from the email. This argument is wrong. Charcoal filtration only removes particulate matter and binds some chemicals. All the bacteria and chemicals that make it through the charcoal are concentrated to twice the level as raw water. This is the water with which the soldiers at Q West have been showering, shaving, and brushing their teeth. And that is the testimony of an Army captain physician now stationed in Iraq, not at Aramadi, but at another base, describing exactly the same condition that was described by the former KBR employees and one current KBR or Halliburton employee at Aramadi. To sum up, A U.S. military surgeon documents the water contamination, bacterial infections for our troops, the willingness by KBR to ignore as to how their own equipment works, and the resistance by KBR to fixing the problem. I want to emphasize, after the January 23rd hearing, we notified Halliburton of the allegations of contamination. We also had been in contact with the Pentagon about this issue. Yet, as the email demonstrates, even after that hearing, and incidentally, the testimony in this email by the Army physician, by this captain, this occurred, this was happening after, during and after the hearing in January of this year. As the email demonstrates, even after this hearing, and 8 months after an internal report done by Halliburton, Halliburton failed to notify its employees of proper procedures and continued to resist attempts to fix the problem. The very practice that an internal Halliburton report documented at the base of Aramati, providing troops with concentrated wastewater for use, was documented again at the base at Key West. Now, we would have liked to have had Captain Michelle Callahan to be present today, but her current duties as a surgeon in Iraq do not permit that. She and her superiors did consent, however, to our making public the information she has provided to us. Today we're going to hear from several witnesses who will speak about the consequences of Halliburton's failure to provide safe, non-potable water to our troops. Mr. Jeffrey Griffiths. Dr. Griffiths is Associate Professor of Public Health and Family Medicine at Tufts School of Medicine, where he is Director of Global Health, the Global Health Division. He's an expert on water distribution systems and waterborne parasites. Captain Matthew Harrison, retired, was a U.S. Army dentist at Camp Aramati, who began experiencing gastrointestinal problems, I should say, shortly after he arrived in Iraq, and has experienced them on a daily basis in the 18 months since his return from Iraq. And Richard Murphy, a representative of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, a group that is gathering information about the health risks that contaminated non-potable water may pose to troops and the adverse health effects that those who used contaminated water may have experienced. I want to make one additional observation. It is not my intention to call together people for the purpose of tarnishing a company or tarnishing the reputation of anyone involved in this. It is my intention to make certain that we provide all that is necessary to assure the safety of the troops. And we did not go search for people who would tell us that there is water being used at these camps and provided to these camps that is unhealthy and detrimental to health. This came from people who are courageous enough to come forward as whistleblowers and say there's something going on here that's wrong, you should know it, and you should investigate it. The result was we held a hearing, we did investigate it, and we found some issues that were very, very troubling. And I should mention to you all, we did invite Halliburton to be present today. We had a letter late last evening, 8 o'clock last evening, from Halliburton's representative. They sent us a copy of an internal Halliburton report that has also not been made public, of February 2006. This is a report that contradicts their employees' internal reports from 2005. And in their report, that essentially is a report that exonerates them, they've done another internal report contradicting their own employees' earlier reports, on-site reports. But they do say, even in their report designed to exonerate them, it says, KBR Halliburton lacked an organizational structure to ensure that water was being treated in accordance with Army standards and its contractual requirements. That's an admission in the report produced by the company to refute the employees of the company who alleged this unsafe water was being provided to the troops. And finally, they say KBR's then standard operating procedure was unclear as to the proper treatment and handling of potable and non-potable water. They describe corrective actions that have been taken, but it is interesting that even as this report was being prepared, February of 2006, the captain of the Army, the physician, is sending us an email saying she sent lieutenants out to follow water lines to find out where this wastewater was being hauled to, and she discovered that it was being hauled and put into the tanks of the non-potable water that was provided to the troops. and or used by the troops. This is really pretty unbelievable to me. And I understand no one wants to take responsibility. Nobody ever wants to be accountable for anything in these issues. But I think what's going on is wrong, and it needs to be stopped. And blowing the whistle on these practices, I think, is a public service. I appreciate all of those who have come forward, perhaps at the risk of their careers. But after the previous hearing, both the Halliburton Corporation and the Pentagon denied that the facts as cited that hearing even existed. We now know that those denials were wrong, and Halliburton and the Pentagon would have known them to have been wrong. It's very troubling to me, and my hope is that at some point we will sufficiently get to the bottom of this to make sure that every soldier serving in Iraq is not going to have to worry about water quality, that there are people on the scene and on site to make sure that everything is done properly and correctly. Now, as I indicated, we have two votes occurring, and I will have some other colleagues joining us, but I'm going to proceed until the second vote happens and then call a very brief recess and go to the floor to have the second vote, which will take about 10 minutes. We are joined by Jeffrey Griffiths, who's a professor of public health and medicine at Tufts University School of Medicine. He's an infectious disease physician and associate professor of public health and medicine at Tufts. Internationally known drinking water and diarrheal disease expert with many years of national and international experience. Dr. Griffiths serves on the National Drinking Water Advisory Council and the Science Advisory Board of the Environmental Protection Agency. He's attended Harvard College, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and Tulane University, and completed his clinical training at Yale, Harvard, and Tufts. Well, Dr. Griffiths, regrettably, everyone at Tulane University knows a lot about water these days. That college, regrettably, as a result of Hurricane Katrina, was driven from its campus, but is now open. And I'm sure you're pleased, and all the alumni are pleased, that Tulane is back up and operating. We welcome you here, and we appreciate very much your coming today. You pull that closer to you, please, and speak directly into it.
There we go.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Griffiths from Tufts University in Boston. I am an infectious disease physician with a great deal of experience in waterborne diseases here in this country as well as overseas. And that has bled over into regulatory oversight and input at the Environmental Protection Agency on the National Drinking Water Committee for the U.S., as well as the Science Advisory Board. And I've worked in Bangladesh, Haiti, Kenya, Ecuador, and other places. So I have both direct experience in training and a lot of research experience in these illnesses. I was asked in preparation for this whether or not I had any diagrams or photographs of the committee, and with due respect, Senator, I don't think any of the things I'm going to mention are very pretty, and I don't think those pictures would be terribly appropriate. I'd like to begin with the importance of not drinking sewage. I think that we all know that drinking or washing with poop is bad for you, and the reasons are so obvious that we consider them common sense. We use water to hydrate ourselves. We use it to clean our bodies. When water is contaminated with pathogens, such as those found in sewage, we become infected with bacteria, viruses, and parasites. These organisms can enter our body and cause a great deal of mischief, including death, when we drink them, or allow them to get in through cuts in our skin, etc. And so people with poor water or inadequate water develop diarrheal diseases, hepatitis, polio, etc., as they are also spread through water, skin infections, and eye infections. Just to speak to diarrheal diseases, these are in diseases such as cholera and dysentery. These were common in the United States 100 years ago, and primarily because of contaminated water. 10% of the infants in Boston died every summer because of diarrheal diseases. And the long lifespan that we have in the United States is primarily due to the provision of clean water, clean food, and sanitation. And by sanitation, I mean that our feces do not contaminate our water supplies. It's very straightforward. By clean water and clean food, I mean that our food and water do not have feces in them. The key to these advances in our public health is that we don't drink, eat, or bathe with poop anymore. Now, the average person today has a lifespan of late 70s, perhaps 78 years. 1900, it was 48 years. And of that 30 years, perhaps 20 is due to sanitation advances, clean water, clean food. So that is a predicate for understanding how critical it is to keep these pathogens out of our environment. And if we don't work to keep our water clean, primarily by keeping human waste out of them, then we return to the bad old days. In the last 10 years, there have been multiple outbreaks of severe diarrheal diseases with many deaths in the United States and Canada, and that's because of breakdowns in the system that we have for treating water. So this should stand as a reminder to us that these are not events that can occur only in Iraq, but they occur here whenever these same principles are ignored. Now, turning to Iraq, cholera and dysentery are common diseases in Iraq. Before the first Iraqi war, the condition of the Euphrates River was described in military documents as poor, with contemporaneous documentation of high rates of diarrheal diseases, including cholera and including dysentery, from untreated water. In 1991, a Central Command assessment of Iraqi water treatment stated that Iraq's rivers also contain biological materials, pollutants, and are laden with bacteria. Unless the water is purified with chlorine, epidemics of such diseases as cholera, hepatitis, and typhoid could occur. The situation in Iraq deteriorated between 1991 and today, and modern accounts of the Euphrates describe the river as essentially an open sewer. Similar to parts of the United States a century ago, rates of waterborne diseases there are very, very high. Sorry, I lost my place here. There we go. The committee should have no doubt that exposure of our troops to untreated river water in Iraq is highly hazardous to their health. By analogy, you could bathe and drink the water at your local town sewage outfall and get a picture of what this would mean. That's what the equivalent is. Furthermore, by taking water below a sewage pipe outlet, as was done at Aramati, one ensures that the water is even more heavily contaminated with pathogens that cause diarrhea and dysentery. Standard practice for decades, if not a century, around the world has been to make sure that your water source for drinking is taken from a river far above the place where your waste and sewage are discharged. To do otherwise flies in the face of common sense. Now, according to documents provided to me by the committee investigators, water for our soldiers' use was taken from the Euphrates River. According to this internal report from Halliburton KBR, water from the Aramati base was undoubtedly obtained within 2 miles of sewage outfalls, thus maximizing the load of pathogens in the water. We are also informed that the water given to soldiers for bathing and other uses was the concentrated wastewater from the osmosis units, which would have increased the pathogen levels that were derived from the Euphrates water. This water was not filtered to remove parasites, nor chlorinated to kill bacteria and viruses. At a minimum, this water should have been chlorinated and filtered as well to remove the cysts of parasites like Cryptosporidium giardia and amoebas, which cause dysentery. The amount of illness and its severity depends on the amount of pathogens in the water and the degree of exposure that people have. Most U.S. citizens, for example, they drink some water when they shower or they brush their teeth, and certainly inhale some of the aerosolized water during showering. So simply stating that shower water doesn't need to be treated in any way is disingenuous, I believe. Some viruses and bacteria lead to cramping abdominal pain, watery diarrhea, dehydration, such as bacteria like cholera or salmonella. Other pathogens lead to bacteria invading the body through the intestine, causing severe pain and intestinal bleeding. We call this pooping of blood dysentery. In many, if not most wars, diseases like dysentery have killed more soldiers than has combat. Diarrhea and dysentery require antibiotic treatment most of the time, as well as attention to hydration status so that people don't die of dehydration. A minority of affected people will need more complex medical care, such as dialysis, to recover from some of these illnesses. Other relevant illnesses include common ones such as hepatitis A, an inflammation of the liver that causes jaundice, typhoid fever, which causes weeks of fever and intestinal bleeding, or leptospirosis, which comes from rat urine and feces. Now, showering with contaminated water exposes all of your skin to these organisms. Some pathogens can gain entry into the body through any cuts, any abrasions on the skin, and some can gain entry through minor or involuntary swallowing of small amounts. Skin infections with fecal bacteria, or even the common ones like Staphylococcus or Streptococcus, can occur. Some of these are known as the flesh-eating bacteria, and these infections can be very significant. Of importance, the use of contaminated water will also lead to eye infections from both bacteria and from viruses. Many viruses, such as adenoviruses found in sewage, are really important causes of eye infections. And a soldier that can't see can't defend himself or herself and can't partake in his or her duties. I can just parenthetically mention that the information that Captain Callahan provided is completely consistent with concerns around showering and skin infections and eye infections. To summarize the medical consequences of this, they're very easy to understand. The majority of people who shower will ingest some water, use some to clean their faces, and use it to wash out cuts and abrasions. Many of the ingested bacteria and some of the parasites will cause diarrhea, dysentery, typhoid. These illnesses lead to significant disability and even death. The list of symptoms to be described from these include diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, stomach cramps, muscle cramps, headaches, fevers, dehydration, and it gets worse from there, including the bloody diarrhea and loss of one's intestines. Other illnesses include hepatitis and polio. Luckily, these are things that our armed forces immunize our soldiers for. But water with poop in it that gets into the eyes will cause very painful infections.
I'm told that there is no time remaining on the vote, and I must present myself to the floor of the Senate to vote. It'll be at about 10 minutes, and you're near your conclusion, I understand. I will be back in 10 minutes, and I believe some colleagues will join me, but we will recess this hearing for 10 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Go ahead, drink a bottle.
Allow you to do that.
Thank you very much, Senator. In concluding that particular little bit, I just wanted to say that the Halliburton report itself said that the consequences of these actions could have led to very severe mass sickness and death, as you pointed out earlier. We now know from science that many of the emerging pathogens that we worry about in the United States are ones that can infect us with very small doses, unlike some of the classic ones like cholera. And so the use of some of this concentrated water to wash things, for people to shower with, people could easily have taken even just a couple of those with their hands and gotten themselves. This water is essentially inappropriate for use in any kind of a circumstance like that. In summary, the source water used at that base was basically dilute sewage. It's highly polluted, and it was unacceptable by any standard for being used without any robust treatment. In what appears to be a profound misunderstanding of the way a reverse osmosis unit works, this concentrated, untreated, polluted water was provided to soldiers for hygienic purposes that was highly likely to make them sick. They would have been better off with water directly out of the Euphrates River. Remedial action should have included filtration, as well as chlorination, as recommended by the internal staff, but it did not. Now, these principles of water treatment have been known since the 1800s, and the principles were ignored. They exposed our troops to infectious diseases risks that are at times lethal. Because of a lack of monitoring and surveillance of the water systems, we don't even know how long and how badly the water was contaminated, although the internal investigators at Halliburton KBR supposed at least a year. If we had that basic monitoring and surveillance information, e.g., if anybody had been paying attention, a proper epidemiological study could be done to quantify and measure how bad was the contamination and what were the effects. When water is contaminated like this, we usually find that the people receiving the water have elevated rates of illness. Just want to make the point, this can happen without the appearance of an epidemic. That's because people who are exposed all of the time have high rates of illness all of the time, and we can't compare the high rate to a lower rate before or afterwards. I urge that these unhygienic, antiquated practices be stopped, the proper monitoring and surveillance for these illnesses be put into place, and I thank you for your time, Senator.
Dr. Griffiths, thank you very much for coming to Washington today to give us your impressions of this. I have a number of questions to ask you, but I'm going to call on Dr. Matthew Harrison next. From what I, Dr. Griffiths, what you have said is that the non-potable water that was, as the Army physician has described, that non-potable water is essentially undiluted sewage.
It's concentrated undiluted sewage.
Concentrated undiluted sewage.
Going through that unit, it's then been concentrated.
And so it would have been better and less dangerous to have taken the water directly from the river.
That's correct, sir.
Rather than concentrate the, I'll ask you more about that, but I appreciate your being here. Matthew Harrison is a captain retired in the U.S. Army Dental Corps, a dentist in Rogers, Arkansas. He is not with us in person. He joins us today via the Internet, and we appreciate very much his patience and appreciate him being with us. From June 2002 to June 2005, he served as a captain in the U.S. Army Dental Corps. October 2003, assigned to the 101st Forward Support Battalion of the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 1st Infantry Division out of Fort Riley, Kansas. December 2003, Dr. Harrison was assigned to Camp Aramadi, Iraq, to replace the brigade dental surgeon. His deployment ended in September 2004. He separated from the Army in June in 2005. Dr. Harrison, thank you for joining us. I believe you are in Rogers, Arkansas at the moment, and we can see you, and I believe we can hear you. So why don't you proceed with your statement?
Thank you, Senator Dorgan. Good morning. My name is Matthew B. Harrison, and I served in the U.S. Army Dental Corps as a captain from June 2002 until June 2005. Like Senator Dorgan said, I was assigned to the 101st Forward Support Battalion of the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 1st Infantry Division out of Fort Riley, Kansas in October 2003. I arrived in Aramadi, Iraq on December 7, 2003 to replace the brigade dental surgeon that was originally assigned to the unit for the deployment. This unit had been deployed to Iraq since September of 2003. By the time I arrived at Camp Aramadi, the permanent dining facility had been constructed. There were makeshift showers, portable toilets, and abandoned buildings in which to live. The water supply for our unit was provided by a water buffalo, which is a portable water tank on a trailer, and also by a large rubber bladder with multiple hoses extending from it that was situated behind our living quarters. This buffalo and bladder were refilled approximately once a week from a common water source used by the entire camp, to my knowledge. On my arrival in Kuwait en route to Iraq, we were briefed that all non-bottled water was non-potable. I never knowingly drank any water from any source other than bottled water during my deployment. Although I did use the water buffalo water to rinse my mouth after brushing my teeth the first night I was in Ramadi, the dentist I was replacing suggested that I probably should not use that water to rinse, and I never used it again. I personally only used the non-potable water for showering, washing my face and hands, and laundering clothes. In our dental clinic, we use the non-potable water for scrubbing our instruments of debris before placing them in our autoclave for sterilization. I estimate conservatively that I wash my hands an average of 10 to 15 times a day with this non-potable water. We never used this non-potable water for intraoral procedures while we were working on patients or allowed the patients to rinse with it. We did use bottled sterile water that we had shipped in for those purposes. Within the first 2 months of being at Camp Aramadi, I developed a gastrointestinal disorder. Prior to my deployment, I had not experienced any gastrointestinal problems other than the occasional stomach virus that everyone contracts occasionally. While in Ramadi, I began to have multiple daily loose stools with periodic diarrhea, roughly 4 or 5 times a week. I experienced no pain, no weight loss, or any other symptoms. After a few weeks, I mentioned my symptoms to the medical staff, and they suggested that my problems were probably related to a change in diet. Change in diet and environment that I was experiencing. I accepted this diagnosis as a plausible cause for my symptoms. However, I continued to have the loose stools, but the diarrhea did become much less frequent. These symptoms continued throughout the rest of my deployment, which ended in September of 2004. I do not know if any other soldiers at Al-Ramadi experienced the same problems, but since we did share the same portable toilets, I can tell you that I was not the only person that was sick. When I returned to the U.S., I continued to have the same symptoms of multiple daily loose stools. I did not worry about it for 2 to 3 months because I assumed that it would take time for me to adjust to the change in diet and environment upon my return from deployment. I did mention my symptoms to a nurse during a doctor's visit for another issue. She said it was probably just change in diet, but that something else, like a parasite, could be causing my problems. After the symptoms continued, the medical clinic at Fort Riley performed a test to check for blood in my stool. The test result was negative, so they ruled out any bleeding in my gastrointestinal tract, and no further tests were done. A colleague of mine in the dental clinic at Fort Riley also experienced the same symptoms as me. He had served in Baghdad as a dentist from April 2003 until December 2003. The medical clinic at Fort Riley told him that he probably just had irritable bowel syndrome, and no tests were done for him. Like me, his symptoms continue even now. I separated from the Army in June 2005. I'm still afflicted with the same daily loose stools, possibly 3 to 4 times a day, with occasional diarrhea 4 to 5 times a month, sometimes verging on uncontrollable. I do not have any other medical conditions or post-war problems of any kind. I saw a local physician several months ago, and he did a cursory exam and checked for blood in my stool also. All of his findings were normal, and he recommended no further tests. My condition at the present is not debilitating. It is more accurate to characterize it as a daily annoyance, but one that I had not experienced until I deployed to Al-Ramadi. I had just learned to live with my condition until I saw an article in a local paper that suggested that the water supply in Al-Ramadi might have been contaminated while I was stationed there. I think that this is a possible explanation for my condition due to the timing and nonspecific nature of my symptoms, especially considering my hand washing and hygiene routine. Although I did not knowingly drink the non-potable water, it is impossible to completely stop it from entering the body through the nose, mouth, or mucous membranes while performing normal daily tasks such as showering or washing your face. I am uncertain if my condition is a result of the water I used at Camp Al-Ramadi or if my symptoms were caused by something else. I do know that if there is a chance that the water was contaminated, I would like the opportunity to be tested to determine if I was exposed to something in Ramadi that has made me sick. I would obviously prefer not to live the rest of my life with this condition, and I fear that my symptoms could even worsen over time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and if you'll be available for questions, we'll go on to hear from Richard Murphy. And following his testimony, we will ask some questions. Richard Murphy is with the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Following the attacks of September 11, 2001, Richard Murphy took a leave of absence from George Washington Law School to enlist in the U.S. Army Reserves, serving with the 372nd Military Police Company of Cumberland, Maryland. In February 2003, he was sent to Iraq, where his unit was assigned to conduct combat patrols, law and order operations, and the training of Iraqi police recruits. His company later ran a prisoner of war detention facility. At any rate, he has a great amount of experience. And Mr. Murphy, thank you for being with us on behalf of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You may proceed. We're joined by my colleague, Senator Pryor. Would you wish to say anything at the moment, or do you wish to wait?
I don't. I'll be glad to wait. Thank you.
Mr. Murphy?
Senator Dorgan, Senator Pryor, thank you for allowing Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America to take part in this testimony today. My name is Richard Murphy. I am an Iraq war veteran, and I'm here on behalf of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, the nation's first and largest organization of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And the civilian supporters of those troops and veterans. The mission of IAVA is to ensure the enactment of policies that properly provide for our troops and veterans, keep our military strong, and guarantee our national security for the purpose of a stronger America. We uniquely empower Iraq and Afghanistan veterans to use their credibility and experiences to speak truth to power, shape public opinion, and place a priority on issues of national security. Our Follow the Money project is investigating where the money appropriated for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars is going. We are here today because of our deep concerns over Kellogg Brown and Root's water quality problems in Iraq. As this committee and others have shown, KBR appears to have been derelict in its duty to provide clean and safe water to our troops, not just at Ramadi, where this problem was first identified, but, as according to the Granger report, to all the sites where KBR was paid to provide clean water. I served 15 months in Iraq from 2003 to 2004 and could have been exposed to the problem that is being discussed here today. I never imagined that I would have had to question the quality of the water at our bases in Iraq. Our Follow the Money project's chief investigator, Dina Razor, has been working closely with Ben Carter, the courageous KBR employee who first identified this problem and then went public when his superiors at KBR tried to hide the problem. We are glad that this committee and now the Department of Defense Inspector General are continuing to investigate this problem. We will be following the progress to ensure that KBR permanently fixes the problem and that the government recoups any money where KBR failed to perform its contractual duties. We are extremely disappointed that this has happened to our troops, especially considering that KBR's log cap contract averaged $425 million a month last year. IAVA is here today to address the aftermath of this problem. Although the extent of the problem is not thoroughly known because of the lack of documentation by KBR, there is a possibility that a widespread group of troops could have been exposed to this contaminated water. IAVA is gathering information to see what contaminants were in the water, and we have posted some preliminary information on our website, www.iava.org, to help inform the troops and their families. We will add to that information as more is known. This should not be construed as an attempt to raise the alarm unnecessarily, but we do believe that any soldier suffering persistent gastrointestinal problems or infection should consider the possibility that these problems are related to his or her exposure to contaminated water. We have posted a 1991 Department of Defense report that lists the health threats in northern Iraq, including a list of potential pathogens that the troops might have encountered due to their exposure to KBR's water. We have also posted a DOD technical bulletin on sanitary control and surveillance of field water supplies and the KBR Granger report that is referenced here today. We want the troops and veterans to educate themselves as to potential problems, what may have caused these problems, and what procedures should have been followed by KBR. While we are not trying to give out medical advice, we do believe that any troops seeking medical treatment for unexplained gastrointestinal or infection problems should be aware of the fact that he or she could have been exposed to extremely contaminated water. We will continue to update our website as we get more detailed information that can help the troops and their families with this problem. We are also asking troops and veterans of Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom to send us any personal stories of an unusual or persistent gastrointestinal illness or infection so that we can continue to assist in the investigation of this negligence. This exposure should not have happened, and IAVA urges Congress and the executive branch to demand a greater level of accountability from KBR and all the private contractors who work on behalf of our troops and veterans in Iraq and across the globe. We at IAVA will continue to search for information on this disturbing problem, and we will share our findings with the government. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Mr. Murphy, thank you very much. And as you indicated, none of us are intending to disclose what we know now in order to cause alarm or in order to inflame passions about this. We want to protect the health of people whose health would be affected by this sort of behavior, and I don't think there's any alternative but to attempt to follow this to the end of the string and find out who did what are the circumstances, who was affected by it, and has it been corrected. Let me go to the Granger report. This was the report of 13th May 2005, and the whistleblowers, the folks who came forward from KBR or Halliburton talked about the Granger report. I now have a copy of the Granger report. It says KBR on the top of it. Mr. Granger was in charge of water quality. He was the water quality manager for all of the operations in Iraq. So he did this report. Here's what he says. The alleged discovery of immediately revealed, quote, no disinfection to non-potable water was occurring for water designated for showering purposes. We know non-potable water was for showering, washing hands, sometimes brushing teeth, even coffee. This caused, I'm quoting now, this caused an unknown population to be exposed to potentially harmful water for an undetermined amount of time. Continuing to quote Mr. Granger's report, the consequences of this particular event are understood to be minimal at the time of this report. The greatest impact will be realized if documentation of chronic related sicknesses surface or if this matter is brought to arbitration or litigation. This event should be considered a, quote, near miss, unquote, as the consequences of these actions could have been very severe, resulting in mass sickness or death. Finally, I'll continue to quote, the likelihood of recurrence of a similar event is considered high if no actions to correct widespread program deficiencies are taken. The deficiencies of the camp where the event occurred is not exclusive to that camp, meaning that countrywide, all camps suffer to some extent from all or some of the same deficiencies noted. This from the employee of Halliburton who was in charge of water quality for all the camps in Iraq. We received this morning from the Halliburton Corporation the following quote. I would note that, this is Halliburton, note that the Granger report, which we understand the Democratic Policy Committee has obtained, represented Mr. Granger's personal conclusions and is not an official company report. KBR believes that much of the report is incorrect, as demonstrated by the subsequent Allen report. They're saying that this report by KBR's employee in charge of all water in Iraq, with KBR at the top of the report, is now no longer belonging to the company. It is the personal conclusions of their employee who was in charge. That is almost unbelievable to me. But I want to finally go back to the charts that I described earlier. Even if you set aside the problems at Aramati from the Granger report, from the hand of the person from Halliburton who was in charge of water, the physician, the Army captain in Iraq today, in her email, says this to me. During a discussion on the 1st of February, that's 2 months ago, between Lieutenant Strading and newly hired KBR water quality technician Mr. Gist, Lieutenant Strading mentioned the bacterial infections that I had been seeing in my clinic. I'm continuing to quote. Mr. Gist told Lieutenant Strading he had some concerns that the reverse osmosis water purification unit concentrate reject was being used to fill the water tanks at the pads. Now, let me have everybody understand that. This is the KBR employee who's telling the Army lieutenant. The KBR employee says he had some concerns that the concentrate reject was being used to fill the water tanks. After hearing this, Lieutenant Strading investigated. He went to the water treatment site and followed the lines from the concentrate drain to the water trucks that were filling up with this water. He then followed the truck and observed it pumping the water into the water storage tank at pad 206. The PM team tested the water, the concentrate distribution point, the results were coliform positive, E. coli positive. And finally, and I will conclude with this again, the quotes from the Army physician now serving in Iraq just received in her email. Quote, after discovering that Halliburton was, or KBR, the subsidiary, was filling the water storage tanks with this concentrate, Lieutenant Strading gathered the base mayor, the KBR site manager, and Bill Gist, the KBR employee, to the site, told them all at the same time that he identified KBR as filling the water storage tanks with this waste concentrate. Mr. Wallace stated, it's always been done that way, and there's not a problem with it. Lieutenant Strading explained that it's against Army regulations, TB MED 577, to use ARPAL waste reject for personal hygiene. Mr. Wallace argued that since the raw water from the Tigris is first filtered through carbon prior to going in, it's acceptable for hygiene. And the doctor then, the physician says, this is wrong. Start with you, Dr. Griffiths. I just read this. You've got Halliburton, their employee, saying, this is fine. We just run it through carbon, so this is perfectly acceptable for hygiene. Your response?
Well, Senator, it's nonsensical. It's complete idiocy. The idea that you could take wastewater and put it through carbon and that's going to render it safe is nonsense. We know that standard water treatment, any water engineer in the United States knows that. Even a physician who doesn't get trained in water testing and stuff like that, who later on gets an extra education in it, like me, knows that. Captain Callahan knew that, too. You have to do other things to water besides run it through charcoal.
What are we to make of an Army physician, Captain Michelle Callahan, who sends us an email and says, I've gone to a website and seen that there are concerns about this water quality. I actually assigned a subordinate, a lieutenant, to go actually follow the water lines and then follow the truck, and here's my conclusion. Do you find that credible?
Yes, I do. This is a basic epidemiological investigation. This is someone who noted a cluster of illness in time that was not expected. She figured out that one of the ways that people could have gotten that was through the water, and they investigate it, and what do you know? They find out that they're getting sewage for water. It's a straightforward investigation.
Is this, you're an expert in water quality, and I've described your background. Is this much ado about nothing, or is this serious? Let's assume the worst case, that what the physician says is accurate, what the whistleblowers have said is accurate, and that we have this waste contaminant which actually degrades water into a much more dangerous category, waste contaminant being poured into these tanks and then used for non-potable purposes, showering, shaving, perhaps brushing teeth, perhaps making coffee and so on. Is that a serious problem that troops should be very concerned about?
Well, I should think so. I mean, what's happening is that troops could, for example, come down with epidemics of dysentery. I mean, this would be terrible. The number of bacteria that you need to pull off water for dysentery may be as few as 10. I just want to make a point that if you want to get cholera, it may take millions of them to drink. But for dysentery, it's only 10. And so that's enough just to touch your face and get it. So there's a route of exposure here. If they happen to be taking water at some point when people upriver had dysentery, then they're all going to be exposed to dysentery also. It's very, very catchy. It's very hard to get rid of. And you could just wipe out that unit's effectiveness immediately. You could anticipate a number of deaths, even with antibiotic treatment.
And our purpose, my purpose certainly isn't to scare anybody or to raise false alarms, but it is to say, let's follow the leads here, and if there's something happening that's wrong, let's by God correct it. It's horribly unfair to troops in the field to find out that someone in charge of producing good water for them is allowing contaminants in that water to make that water dangerous as it's being delivered to the troops. If that's happening, we can't allow it to happen. And there's very substantial evidence that is happening, despite the public denials of the company, And also the Pentagon at this point. Now, Dr. Harrison, I didn't mention, we see it, of course, on our material, but Dr. Harrison is from Arkansas, from your state, Senator Pryor. Dr. Harrison, you don't know that a gastrointestinal issue that you have came from your service in Iraq or not. You're not alleging that you know that, but you're simply saying you served there and you have a gastrointestinal condition after you came back, and you have understood there are some water issues, and that's the purpose of your testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct. I don't know that what I have is related to being in Ramadi, but there appears to be a possible connection. So,
Dr. Griffiths, well, I'm not going to ask you to make a diagnosis here, but I assume it's perfectly plausible that a fair number of troops who might have been exposed to non-potable water that is contaminated, doubly contaminated, in this case, could have minor, or in some cases not so minor, gastrointestinal infections that hang on for some while that will go unreported until they see that someone else has experienced the same problem. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Dorgan, that's correct. In fact, I would just say to Dr. Harrison that I can think of four parasites that could have caused his illness, and he did not describe that anyone ever did the proper workup for looking for any of those in terms of what he mentioned. So if you ask me, here's a guy who goes there, he's healthy, he gets something while he's there. So we have a temporal and spatial association, which is what you need for epidemiology. Where does it happen and when does it happen in terms of the onset? So this began while he was in Iraq, and then it's continued after that. So maybe offline, Dr. Harrison, I've got a couple of suggestions for you.
We've had experience here in the United States Senate of people diagnosing illnesses on the record from the floor.
It's a very dangerous thing, sir.
We prefer that not be done any longer, so you may visit following this. And Mr. Murphy, we appreciate very much your being here, and I think your purpose is a noble purpose, and that is if there are others who are experiencing some problems as a result of this, we should know about it, you should know about it, in order to respond to it. My understanding is that your tour was extended 3 months in Iraq, and you were assigned to guard civilian truck convoys. I want to just ask you a question off this water subject before I call on my colleague, Senator Pryor. We had hearings here about contract waste, fraud, and abuse, and not just about Halliburton, although admittedly Halliburton was a significant part of it, because the log cap contracts that were given Halliburton were no-bid, sole-source contracts, and there is massive waste and abuse, and I think some fraud involved. There have been substantial investigations. But one of the witnesses talked to us about brand-new trucks, $80,000, $90,000 trucks, having a flat tire and being left by the side of the road to be torched just because they had a flat tire. And did you experience or see any of that?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about it. Just to amplify what we've heard in other hearings.
We were conducting convoys from the south, a base called Talil, and we were moving up north toward Baghdad on a road in the middle of the desert, just about as safe as you can get in Iraq. And at one point, one of the trucks, one of the civilian KBR trucks, got a flat tire, and they didn't have the proper wrench to change the tire, so the decision was made to torch the truck.
Is that a new truck?
Yes, sir.
So they didn't have a wrench that was appropriate to change the tires, so they burned the truck.
That was the story, sir.
I mean, I've heard that before, but you actually saw the truck, did you?
I saw the truck, sir.
Unbelievable to me that that sort of thing goes on. But that's for another day, I guess. But I appreciate your amplifying what we have heard. Yours is a first-hand observation of what we've heard others describe. What kinds of outreach are you doing with other Iraq and Afghanistan veterans?
Well, right now we're reaching out to our veterans, our 50,000 members, to see if anybody does have these gastrointestinal problems. And we want to make it known to this committee and get them the treatment that they need. We're also working on increased funding for the VA and making sure that they appropriately fund the VA. Considering that many soldiers are coming back with mental health issues.
You know, soldiers in Iraq have plenty to worry about and plenty to be concerned about, their safety, the safety of troops they serve with and so on. The last thing I want soldiers to have to worry about is the safety of their drinking water, the safety of the water that they use for showering or brushing teeth. I mean, that is not what we should burden soldiers with. They ought to expect that these contracts are completed with people that know what they're doing, that the water that's delivered to them is good water, good quality water. It's not going to endanger their health. And I find it unbelievable that we hear today that so-called Granger report is now judged by this corporation to be Mr. Granger's personal conclusions. That report has the company's name on it. This was the guy that was in charge of producing water for all of the bases at Iraq. Now the company disowns the employee that still works for him. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me that we can't seem to get to the truth. But I would say this. The physician, the captain, that is in Iraq today, who has sent us an email, unsolicited email to say, here's what I observe, it's pretty hard to try to destroy that person's credibility because they're describing following the water lines to the tanks, to the trucks. I mean, that's pretty credible in my judgment. Senator Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me follow up on what you just said, and the word you use is unbelievable. It is unbelievable to me that our troops are put in a situation where they don't even have clean water. It's just unthinkable that we would do that to our troops, or any corporation would do that to our troops. Let me ask if I can, Dr. Harrison, again, thank you for joining us, and it's great to see you. I don't know if you can see us, but we can see you. Thank you for joining us. Let me ask about your condition, Dr. Harrison. Could you just tell the committee very briefly what your condition is?
My condition began while I was in Ramadi about 2 months after I arrived. And the way I've described it is just multiple daily loose stools with, 4 to 5 rounds of diarrhea a week, which continued on for a few weeks. I brought it to the attention of the medical staff in Ramadi, who attributed it, did it probably to changes in diet and environment. I did, in my opinion, get a little bit better because the diarrhea definitely decreased in frequency, but even to this day, I do have multiple loose stools daily.
Okay, and since you've been back stateside, have you been tested either at a VA facility or an Army facility or even your personal physician?
After a few months after my redeployment at Fort Riley, I was tested strictly for blood in my stool, which came back negative. Once again, it's thought maybe it was just change in diet and environment. Since I separated from the Army and relocated back to Arkansas, I did see another physician here, and basically the same test was done just to rule out blood in the stool, and no further tests were recommended. So that's all that's been done.
Okay, but you still are experiencing some problems.
Yes, sir.
Now, given the timing of the development of your symptoms in Iraq, do you suspect that impurities in the water are to blame?
It's possible, but I cannot tell you that it is, no.
Okay. And what about others that you serve with in Iraq? Did others have problems similar to yours?
It's not something that we discuss. I do know that one of my colleagues, another dentist at Fort Riley, was in Baghdad a few months before I was actually in Iraq, and he had the same problems and still does now. And while I was in Iraq, since we all shared the same toilets, like I said, I didn't discuss this with anybody, and we weren't really talking about it, but I can tell you that there were other people that were sick as well with GI disturbances.
Okay. And was bottled water available to you at all times there in Iraq?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We ran low one time, but I don't think that we ever actually ran out.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Dr. Griffiths, let me ask you, you've just heard the witness talk about his symptoms and generally just some symptoms that other people we're going through. Just again, not to ask your medical diagnosis, but just what's your impression after hearing that?
This description is screaming a more chronic parasitic infection that would have been acquired while in Iraq. I'm a member of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. This is classic medical training in infectious diseases that people who are in this kind of an environment with this kind of exposure may develop things like these chronic parasitic infections. And the testing that Dr. Harrison mentioned would, of course, not show any of that. You need to do specific testing to look for it.
So if you had a patient show up in your office with these complaints, what would your advice to them be?
I would immediately ask for some stool samples to look for these parasites that I've just mentioned. We do occasionally see some bacteria that, that cause this kind of a chronic infection also, but almost always they're parasites. And these, by the way, would be parasites that would be ones that would be present in the wastewater from a RO unit, for example.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think that's all I have, but I want to thank you for continuing on this issue because it's very important. Thank you.
Senator Pryor, thank you. And once again, I want to say that our objective here is to make certain that if something is happening that's wrong, that has any endangerment for our troops, then it gets corrected and corrected quickly. And my great frustration is and concern is that it seems to me like all of the people involved in this, all of them are more interested in trying to avoid responsibility or accountability than to determine how this gets fixed. And I'm concerned that even now we may not have adequate protections to make certain that water that is being delivered in these camps is safe for troops to use. And I'm not talking about drinking water. I'm talking about the potable water, which is used for non-drinking. And for, the Dr. Griffiths talked about showering and what happens when you shower or you have an open cut or you would brush your teeth or have coffee with this kind of water. And I think this is a very serious issue, and we take seriously the admonitions of the Army captain, the physician who has sent us an email, and others who have contacted us, and we wanted to have a follow-up hearing. Again, I'm surprised that the company that we are paying as a government, where the company that we're paying to do this work, it seems to be producing reports to undermine its own employees' conclusions and seems to be producing reports that are at odds with the conclusions of an Army physician who's on the scene, on the ground in Iraq. We will continue to inquire about these issues, and we continue to be in touch with the Pentagon. We invited the Halliburton Corporation to be present to testify today. We invited representatives of the Pentagon as well, and so they chose not to be here, but we will continue making this inquiry. Let me say, Dr. Harrison, thank you for spending your time this morning being with us from Arkansas. And Dr. Griffiths, thank you. You have a very impressive background, and we appreciate your lending your expertise to us today. And Mr. Murphy, thanks for the work that you're doing on behalf of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And thank you for your service to our country as well. And I would say that as well to Dr. Harrison. This hearing's adjourned.